Hello, everyone. This is Andrea Von Kampen, and welcome to my podcast, It's My Party. This is a podcast where I sit down with women who I find to be interesting and creative, and we have meaningful conversations. So if that sounds good to you, let's get started. On today's podcast, I interview my friend Lydia Luce. Lydia is a folk Americana singer-songwriter and multi-instrumentalist based out of Nashville, Tennessee. Brought up in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, she learned how to play viola and guitar from her mother, who conducted her own symphony as well. Also, this summer, Lydia had an article in the Wall Street Journal about her tour bus, Seaweed, and she also released singles in May and June. One is called Vow, and the other is called Matter of Time, and both are so gorgeous and cinematic. You should definitely check them out. Lydia is one of those people who I feel like I've known forever. We've both been related artists to each other on Spotify for a really long time, and I had followed her Instagram forever. It sort of felt like we were already friends before we officially met. We met in Nashville last year. I think it was last September, maybe. And immediately, it just felt like we had been friends forever. It's the craziest thing. Lydia is such a warm and sweet person. I love the wisdom and insight she brings to this podcast episode. We chat about the music industry, songwriting, and what it is like to grow up in a musical family. So here we go. Lydia Luce. How are you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for being on my podcast.
Thanks for asking me.
Yes. So exciting. So I saw you got hacked on Twitter.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't remember I have a Twitter ever. Yes. Until, of course, this happened. My friend texted me and was like, you got super hacked. Like, this dude was posting just, I don't know. He like changed all my photos. But it still had all of my, like, the feed or whatever. I don't know anything about
Twitter. Oh, no.
And so I emailed Twitter and was like, hi, help me. And every email response was in Turkish. So they, like, I don't know. I just gave up after that. I was like, I'll just start over.
So were there any tweets that were bad? Like, did they say anything that was, like, really badly representing you?
No, not – they didn't even, like, tweet anything, but they changed all of their – the photos were just guns.
Oh, no.
So that's why my friend was like, I don't think this is you.
Oh, no. No, I'm just joking. Wow, that's so awful. I am so worried about digital health because I feel like to truly be safe from getting hacked, you have to like change your password every week. You know, like I just throw my hands up and say the people who truly want to destroy my life digitally probably can.
Yeah.
You know, and sort of like if someone wants to break into my house, like what can I do? You know, like I have a dog who will injure them.
I don't think my dog would.
She would. No, your dog is way too nice.
She's so nice. I know.
Isn't that the difference though between Australian Shepherd and Australian cattle? Cattle dog are like will injure. Like my cattle dog almost killed my grandfather. Whereas shepherds are like really sweet, but they both herd animals. Is that right?
Yeah, they do. And people and children. She likes to herd children. Yeah. But yeah, I don't think, like, even when there's somebody, it's so funny because she is kind of timid with certain people. If you're wearing a weird hat or if you have something on your back that's like she does, it's large, like cello cases. She hates cello cases. So she will like bark at them, but then she'll just kind of like cower away. So I don't know if she was like afraid. If somebody did break in, I don't know. We're just so sweet.
Well, I know what Rosie would do. And my grandfather, who's 93 years old, came into our backyard one day. This was at my parents' house. And Rosie had never met him before. And because he came in unannounced to the backyard, she thought he was an intruder. Now, we're still trying to work on her realizing that, like, a 93-year-old man, even if he's a stranger, probably won't be a threat. But anyways, she circled him and bit his ankles and tried to take him down. Oh. It was really bad.
Oh, no. That's so bad.
And then the worst thing about cattle dogs is that they never forget. So she's seen him several times, and every time he starts walking, she flips out. So anyways, we're working on that. Enough about my cattle dog. I want to talk about you. So let's take it back from the beginning. I remember when we got coffee this fall in Nashville, you told me that you come from a pretty musical family. Is that right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. I do. My mom used to be a dog. No, back to dogs. My mom used to be a classical conductor and okay. then she retired. So she like played organ. She's like super badass. Like one of, especially in the time when she was conducting, like there weren't really many female conductors at all. And that's she so got cool. her doctorate's degree in conducting. And then basically like forced my brother and I to play string instruments so we could play in her orchestra.
Okay. So she conducted an orchestra. That was like her yes. main group.
Yeah.
Okay. Cool.
Yeah, before the string thing, she was doing choral groups as well. And mm-hmm. she had like, she would put on like crazy magical dinners and like, and then she went to Westminster Choir College for school too.
Oh,
so,
wow.
Yeah, so she did the choir thing and she did the symphony thing later. But she has since retired and is now just hanging out with horses full time and living her best life.
Mm-hmm.
And but my brother is.
Was that all based in Florida? Are you from Florida yeah. originally? Okay. Okay. Cool.
Yes. I was born in Georgia, but we left when I was like one. So I grew up in South okay. Florida.
Cool. Mm-hmm. So you are forced to play a string instrument from a young age. Do you pick violin, viola? What do you pick?
So my mom picked violin for me. And then okay. It wasn't really a choice. Like we started mm-hmm. playing piano when we were super young and she was our piano teacher. And then when we were like, I was 7, my brother was 6. She was like, you're going to play the cello and you're going to play the violin. And then in high school, when I like for a while, I was like, ooh, practicing and I hated it. And then when I was like super young and then in high school, I started going to orchestra camps and like becoming friends with string people and I just really loved it. And so I then switched to viola in high school.
Okay.
And to get like scholarships and stuff.
Yes.
And then I actually love the viola. Yeah. Viola is awesome. So
it's so beautiful. Yeah. So you go to college for viola?
I did. I went to a conservatory and it was just like strict classical. Like we were playing like 8 hours a day. It was super, super rigid and not very fun. And I just felt like the joy that I did have for music was like slipping away. And so I only spent a year there. And then I took a year off and was just kind of like, I don't know, like meandering around Florida and figuring out what I was going to do next. I went to
as most Floridians do at some point in their life.
Yeah, we just
I feel like
kind
that's
of
the start of like every good teen show.
Hanging out in Florida with my friends. Getting into trouble.
Yeah, so you're stirring up some trouble in Florida. Mm-hmm. And then what do you do from there?
Then I ended up, I hadn't even heard about Berklee College of Music. Like I was in such a like classically, just classical yes. world. And my mom was just like, this is music. And so I was like kind of playing, like when I was in the conservatory, I was playing like little, I was like doing, like jamming with other musicians and like, just
no
like
wonder you
fun.
Didn't know much about any other world than the classical world. I was just playing jams.
I was playing the jams. Yes, jamming and whatnot. And like, I was like, this is fun. How do I do this kind of music? And so somebody told me about Berklee and I like looked it up and was like, this looks so magical and ended up applying and I applied on viola. And so I got a scholarship and was one of the only violists because nobody plays viola. And violists like typically stay in the classical world. So like all string players. And so me being a violist at Berklee was just like super rare and ended up being it was so awesome. Like I did so many things. I had like the most ADD and was like taking all the classes and like, just like, oh, that looks fun. And I truly had a great experience there. And it made me realize that there's so many different things I could do with music. So
Yeah, totally. And do you still like, do you still feel good about going to Berkeley? I feel like I talk to so many people who have gone to schools like that, that sort of do that, that blend and, you know, teach you more about the commercial side of music. Mm-hmm. Do you think that a lot of people you went to school with didn't have as good of a time as you, or at that point did it feel like you all were just like loving it?
I mean, I'm sure everybody's experience was different. Like me coming from classical, like that was all I knew, and learning, then going to Berkeley and like learning how to improvise and like learning about just like the options that I could have in a music career was really great for me. Like I think that it changed the trajectory of my music career in such a great way. And I also just met so many people that I'm like, I collaborate with here or like still know. And so I think like, I mean, I think it just depends on the situation. Like if you're a songwriter that went to Berkeley to study only songwriting and you are in so much debt right now, like you might regret going, honestly, because you don't have to study songwriting. Like your songwriting, like, and I did take some songwriting classes and it was like, I hated the songwriting classes because I just didn't want to fit into the molds that they were creating. And so I think it actually hurt a lot of songwriters.
Because I hated songwriting classes.
Yeah. So did you go to
like songwriting classes at the university? So I went to school for 2 years at a school my dad works at and had free tuition, but felt like I needed to go to a school that was more into commercial music because I knew I wanted to gig. I knew I wanted to write songs. So I went to Belmont University for a year and and the songwriting classes, I agree, were terrible. And I just... I don't know. I think the one thing I learned from Belmont was that I didn't need Belmont to have a career in this and that I needed to get out as fast as possible. So then I left after 1 year, finished my degree at Concordia. I remember going to my advisor and being like, all right, I've done 3 years of college. What do I need to do in the next, 9 months to get out of here with some sort of degree to show for? And she was like, well, you can just get a BA in music. So that's what I did. But yeah, I am like highly suspicious of these schools that say like, come here and we'll make you, a performing musician. We'll help you be successful in this, because I think you and I both can agree at this point, like there is no fast track. And yet I think that the way you're describing Berkeley was sort of like just learning and truly going there to learn is such a better method of like, why go to a school like this?
Yeah, that's why school exists, is to just immerse yourself in the education of it. And like, that was me, I feel like, more broadening my like tool belt and like being able to acquire all these new tools that I didn't have in my music career, and then taking those tools and actually doing it. Like, you're not going to go to school and like, and then just be doing it.
Yeah, come out with a record deal for solo viola.
Yeah, I mean, but I did have friends that I went to school with that, like, because it's also, I mean, like, too, like, it's also so much of just who you meet and along the way. And so I did have friends that, like, did come out and, like, graduate with these incredible careers. Like, I went to school, Charlie Puth was in my class, and he did very well at like having that path. But then what's I think, like, he had his own work ethic that was already with him, that, and so he wasn't just like doing the classes, like he was working. He was like one of the hardest working people I remember at, like, in our group of friends. And like, he was already working, writing, producing, like, not just focused on that, not expecting Berkeley to give that to him. So then when he graduated, he did take the tools that he got from school. Like, he had met people by then, and like, it just kind of, it helped him, but it didn't do it for him. And nothing's gonna, like, so no sense. School will do it for you.
Yeah, it's so true. Like, even as, I don't know, like, as I grow, I think I'm continually reminded that it still just comes down to like hard work, and it's like a marathon. And even when things like go really well, and even when you see other people sort of like start to blow up, like, they still have a lot of work, And it really is just a lot of work, which is a good thing. So I think so. So anyways, after Berkeley, do you go to grad school? I remember you telling me you go to West Coast, right?
Yeah. So in between, I like one of the things that I did a lot at Berkeley was take a lot of world music classes. Mm-hmm. And so I thought I wanted to be an ethnomusicologist when I graduated.
So cool.
And so my first, it was like I went to Ghana two different summers and studied dancing and drumming and like fell in love with just learning about different cultures, music, and actually like doing it, practicing it. And thought like, oh, I'll do that. I'll get a career in ethno and like just travel and play and whatever. And I quickly learned that wasn't what a degree in ethno is. And so I worked at
what
the
is a degree in ethnomusicology?
I mean, I think it like is that in college, it's fun and maybe you can travel and study different types of music, but then to get a job in it is like, it's like becoming a marine biologist and wanting to go play with dolphins and then realizing like you spend most of your time in a lab and like doing doing the more just like dirty work. And so you become like a teacher, so I got a desk job at the Smithsonian and they have a record label. And so that was my experience of like a career in ethno, what that would look like. And it was very much a desk job. It was like, mm-hmm. I was working in the archives and it was really cool, but like I wasn't playing music at all. And so, I didn't love it. I'm grateful for my time because I think like all the things in my career have been like, oh, let me try this. Okay, no. Not that. Let me do something else. And I don't think any of it has been a waste. It's just been like adding to what I'm doing now. And then I went to UCLA after that because my boss at the Smithsonian, he had gotten his ethnomusicology degree from UCLA. And UCLA is a very much performative, they do more performing ethno kind of work. Like you can go and study anything. It was incredible. You could study, like I took Nigerian drum and dance classes. I took like Irish fiddling classes, like anything. And so
that sounds incredible.
It was just fun. But then when I got there, I got there on a viola scholarship. So, and I was a teaching assistant. And so I was like working for UCLA too. And so they were like, no, you can't take all those fun ethno classes. You have to take all of these classes. I don't know. It was another example of like, I don't know, the education system being like if I go to grad school, I already know what I want to learn at this point. Mm-hmm. And then they wouldn't let me learn the things that I wanted to learn. So it was really frustrating.
So frustrating. So did you graduate from there or did you end up leaving?
I did graduate. I almost left. Wow. I know. I like did the year and then I came to Nashville in the summer in between and was like starting to songwrite and came to Nashville and was like, ooh, I love Nashville. Like everybody's like super pumped on music and having fun doing it. And so I was like, I want to move to Nashville, but I don't know. I have trouble quitting things. And then I also have like my parents in my head, like, you must get a graduate degree. And like,
it's funny you say I have trouble quitting things because I was about to say, like, man, I'm such a quitter. Like, I would have been out there the minute like it didn't work out. Like, I've always quit things and have felt no shame in quitting. That's so
amazing,
funny,
though.
Remember like quitting like second grade summer softball because I just didn't see myself, you know, going anywhere with it. And so I just quit mid-season. And I remember like other people trying to make me feel shameful for quitting. And I just knew like, look, it's not going to happen. I promise you, this is not going to happen.
Yeah.
But anyways, there's probably something good in. No, I think it's probably better to follow things through than to quit midway. But so you finish school. And then you go to Nashville, mm-hmm. is that right?
Yeah.
So is that what year is this then? Because your first EP that comes out, is it 2015?
Mm-hmm.
The Tides, right? I looked this up.
Yeah.
So how do you go from graduating UCLA to putting this EP out? What does that trajectory look like?
So I like recorded that EP that summer in between, and just in my friend's house, like I'd like written five songs that I liked and was like, okay, I'm going to record them and do the thing and put them out that fall when I got back to UCLA. And I decided to go back and finish. And then I talked to my boss and was like, hey, like I talked to my boss and I also talked to my viola teacher. And I was like, I'm not like most people go to grad school to continue practicing and so that they either become a teacher, like a professor at a college, or to get an orchestra job. And I was like, I'm not trying to do either one of those things, but I do want to get, I always wanted to get better at viola. And so I was like, I will like practice and I'll show up for that. But I want to also take classes that are going to help me in the trajectory that I'm now trying to go in, which is the songwriting thing. And so totally. They actually did have a commercial music program. Mm. And I took some like classes there about like trying to be an artist and what you needed to do. And like, it was business for music, like music business, but for artists. Mm. I took mm-hmm. one class on that. And so I just like dove into that and just started like, I don't know, like trying to figure out what this path is that we're all still trying to figure out. But
yeah, right. It's like again, the more like you learn, the more you're confused.
Dude, I know, totally. But yeah,
one thing I want to ask about this EP is, so like we've both sort of said that songwriting classes didn't really do it for us. What did do it for you when it came to songwriting? What was your process with those first five songs? Because I know things change, but sitting down to decide that you're going to be a songwriter is kind of an intimidating thing. And so what did that look like for you, like that those first batch of songs?
Yeah, the first song I wrote it as a present to my brother and my sister-in-law as a wedding present. And then I just saw like how it moved people, and that kind of inspired me to keep going, honestly. Like I saw like, and even when I played it for the person that produced the EP, like I saw how it actually was like moving people, and I felt good about that and felt like, okay, like maybe I should just keep trying this. I'm also really good. I'm really productive at doing things that that aren't the top of my list. Like I was in grad school and yes. I really was. So I was getting so good at writing and doing my artist thing, 'cause I wasn't like doing the grad school thing the best yes. of my ability.
Yes. This is essentially why I'm doing this podcast. I have incredible follow through with things that I need to stop focusing on. So, okay. Yes. So you're writing songs while you're here. At this point, do you feel like you have a process that's working? Like, do you sit down every day? Are you doing things to help, like, you know, strengthen that creative muscle? Like, what is your process at this point?
I don't know if I had figured out a process. I think I was just drawn to it, and so wanting to do it more because it was this thing that was new, and it was also more exciting to me than taking the opera class and having to do my final in opera. So I was just like, yes, this is fun. Like I want to create, I want to write, and like the whole, I want to play shows, I want to tour. So I was playing a little bit more in LA and like, yeah, just kind of, I mean, the first shows I did, I had only a few songs. So they were like half covers and half songs that I wrote. But yeah, I think now I kind of have a more of a process, but I think I think it's always changing because it depends it depends on like where I'm at with writing. If I'm in a place where I feel like I have to, for some reason, even if it's something that I'm like forcing myself to do, then it feels more uncomfortable. But if I'm like searching, if I'm just like doing it for the pure joy of like creating, then I'm going to show up for it more. And so I feel like in the last like 2 years, I've been like trying to find what that is. And so now what I do to like kind of keep myself there is like, I read this book. Actually, I have it right here. Jeff Tweedy's book, How to Write One Song.
Oh,
have you read it?
No, I'm going to put this on my list right now.
Yay. Oh my God. Ooh, it's
I love
great.
When people tell me to read books.
Yay.
Okay. It's Jeff so Tweedy, great. How to Write One Song. Okay. And what did this book teach you?
So I didn't write much in the beginning of the pandemic, and then pretty much like a year and a half in, I just still wasn't writing and I still wasn't interested in it. And then I released that last record and was like, okay, now I don't have any, like, I was like, oh, I'm not writing because I'm releasing a record. And then it was done. Mm-hmm. So I was like, okay, I guess I should try this again. And so, but I had still had this, like, I think even writing for that record, I'd had this, like, I have to write songs for a record to put out, to do my career. And I wasn't approaching it from this, like, I get to create and have fun. And so it made me have fun. Like, I brought That's it with so me great. On a, yeah, you're going to love it. Oh my gosh, I'm so excited. I suggested I'm so it to excited another. Too. It's so good. My friend that just is reading it now is like, oh my gosh. I feel like just such a gift because he gives you exercises. And I love exercises, like just word exercises. And you start to like, I don't know, you start to like see it takes the seriousness out of writing. It takes the like, I need to have something great to say out of writing. And it just makes it like, wow, these words really are interesting together. Or like, what an interesting landscape it is to put this word with this word that doesn't make any sense. And it opens up this whole new thing in writing. And then maybe you start to find the meaning of the song through just like your creative little journey that you've set upon to just from putting weird words together. So
wow.
I don't know. And he has so many exercises. Yeah.
So you take this with you. Where do you take this book with you?
I went to this island off of Washington State called Orcas Island.
Ooh.
And it was so magical. I got
How long did you go there?
It was a week. Okay. This place called Doe Bay does artist Doe Bay
sessions. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
I've seen some of these YouTube videos. I didn't know they did artist residencies. That's amazing.
It was something they started. So, yes, you should. Oh my gosh. They would love you. They,
I'm looking they to used get out to of do town. These.
Oh my God. And this is literally the most beautiful. You should go in the summer because it's just so amazing. I will try. Amazing.
Okay. Keep going. I'm sorry. I keep epic. Interrupting you. And no, you're good. So you take this book by Jeff Tweedy to this residency on Orcas Island. And
yes.
What takes place?
And I just like, man, I just had so much fun reading. I got up every morning, read a chapter, and then did an exercise. And then started doing like, I started to find like there are certain exercises I really loved. And so I would do those more. And the residency and like how it all happened, it was just like, okay, I need to go do this. Like they were full for the summer. And they used to have this epic festival like with probably tons of artists that you know have played it, and they couldn't do that anymore because of COVID, so they opened this residency up and basically just invite artists to come stay for free. They feed you, you can play, they pay you to be there. It's like such a loving artist retreat. Like they're just, I don't know, and the owner is amazing. But yeah, I just kind of set up, I just was like, okay, I'm gonna spend a lot of alone time, go hiking, like have fun, no stress, like just get up and like have fun writing. And I was excited to get up and write. And I felt like I hadn't felt that way in a while. So
that's so great.
And now I'm excited again. Yeah.
And now you have an EP ready, right? Or an LP. Don't you have something in the works?
Ooh, I do.
I'm so excited. Before we talk about that, can I ask you real quick about your two full lengths that you released after your EP, Azalea and Dark River? With both of those, I guess I sort of want to know, like, how do you feel about how things turned out with those? You know, a lot of people talk about like the creative process behind them, but I'm sort of interested in like how you felt about the outcome of it. I mean, you released Dark River during a pandemic, so that's kind of an interesting one, but like, Azalea, that's actually how I found out about you, was through Spotify. And I feel like that record is so beautiful and did so well. I mean, were you sort of surprised by the reception, or was this sort of like where you were sort of envisioning the trajectory all along? I mean, I know I just asked like 17 questions in that question, but just unpack that a bit, Lydia.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, dude, I don't know. Like, I definitely didn't think it was gonna like pop off like that. Like, it was really cool. It was my first full length, and I think I approached that one with this like blank canvas of like, well, it could only go any direction, because I don't know, like, I hadn't really been doing it for that long. And so I was like, if I do it and it doesn't work, whatever, because I haven't been doing it. So it was like, I couldn't have failed, in my opinion, because I didn't really have much to compare it to. And that's the beauty of your first album, I think. I don't know if you feel that way.
Oh, absolutely.
And now, and like the second album for me was like, okay, like, how do I have to like do it better than the last. Yeah. And I don't know. I'm honestly glad that I've gotten, I did have a good time recording that, but I had a difficult time writing it because I was in
this
my
head
about.
This is the second album? Dark reviews, yeah. Right?
I think, yes. Yeah, I was like, okay, I was just comparing it to my first and trying to, yeah, like one up it, I guess. And I'm happy it's out of the way, because I don't feel that way now moving forward. I feel like, I don't know if you felt that way with the second project, but it was so much, I felt a lot of pressure, and pressure that was only coming from me. Nobody else.
Okay. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, it's weird for me because Old Country did do so much better than I thought, than I could have like hoped for just an independent release. But then I did some EPs in between that and that spell. And that spell was really like a pandemic record. And I felt like I had way more time with that and was actually able to finally be like, well, you know, I don't know if you feel this way, but you know, whenever you're making a record on your own dime, you just have to be so conscientious of the budget. With Old Country, that was definitely there. Just really trying to make sure I wasn't overspending. And with that spell, it was sort of like the world shut down. We can take our time. You know, clearly I'm still considering budget, but things had opened up a bit to where, you know, it wasn't like everything I was making was going into a record. And so that was actually a lot more freeing. But I don't know. It's so weird. I do think that when you have the freedom of mind, that's always easier to create than when you are sort of like trapped in a certain headspace. I don't know.
Yeah. Oh, man. 100%. I think like, and we're doing that to ourselves, and it's so
99%
messed up.
Of our problems are self-induced.
I know. I mean, Yeah.
So can we talk about this new book project? Right. You know, oh, what's that? Yeah. Tell me that one.
Oh, so it's kind of just about the thing we're talking about, but it's called Inner Engineering, and it's by this guru called Sadhguru, and it's kind of just about this, like, that what we're talking about, like, we are responsible for ourselves and nobody else, and like, we, everything that's happening, like, it's not around us, it's in us, and just the pressure and the stress, all the things that we're building up that seem to be around us, even maybe sometimes, like, it's all coming from inside us, and we're ultimately in control of like how we respond to things. And
that's so good.
I just started it a couple days ago. Yeah,
I'm writing down all these suggestions. So this new project,
yes,
talk about this. Have you recorded it yet? Are you putting it out on a label? What are the details behind this project?
So this EP, I decided to do like very last minute, like towards the end of last year. And these are all songs that I wrote on Orcas Island. And oh my God. I honestly was like, because I'm working on another full length record, and I'm finishing that in March. But I don't want to put it out this year, and I just, it's not going to be ready for a while, and I kind of just want to take my time. Mm-hmm. And so this EP was kind of like a, like, let me put something out in between. And I was going to just kind of like put it out, and then having just, I don't know, I love the songs now and the experience. I worked with the same guy I worked with for the last two records, but I like now having this experience of like freedom in my mind of creativity, as opposed to like the last record, it felt just really good to work with the same producer, but it's like a little bit more in the Azalea world, but like evolved from that, of course, because I'm not the same person, but yeah. So I'm gonna start releasing it in March, and yeah, I'm excited about it.
That's so exciting. You should send it to me after this podcast.
I will. I will.
I'd like a first listen. And then when I do the intro for this podcast, I can say, and I have listened to it.
Yeah, great.
Oh, that's really exciting. So 2022, you're releasing this EP. Do you have any touring on the horizon?
I am booking a tour in, I think it's going to be, it's like mid June into July, so the summer.
Oh, nice.
I just decided I don't want to be around outside much in the winter. So I think I'm more of a spring summer tour, and then I hibernate and try to not go outside. Being from Florida.
Totally. No, I totally also adopt that, even though I've never lived in a warm climate. So are you self-booking that? You said I booked it.
Yeah. I don't have a booking agent.
How is self-booking? Tell me about that.
I mean, it's, I don't really, I'd rather to not do it, but I feel like having a booking agent is another one of those things where I could sit around and be like, well, I don't have a booking agent, so I'm never going to go on tour. Mm-hmm. Or if I really want to go, I could just do it myself. And like, I'm highly capable person to do all that. And so it's not super fun, but I honestly like, so we did, I booked a seaweed tour, my school bus tour with my partner and my dog for last summer. And we just took the month of July and I booked it. So I got to book like days in between shows to go explore. Great.
I feel like I should interject real quick that you have a school bus that you've named Seaweed that you've converted. Yes. Okay. She didn't just like, you know, she's not a school bus driver. Like
side hustle.
And it's so this was an intentional flip of a school bus into a van that you can live in, that you tour in, that you have named Seaweed. Okay.
Indeed.
So you get to book like days. You know, days in between shows so you can enjoy your life.
Exactly. And just have fun. Yeah. And like, obviously we're bringing our dog too. So we want to like go, I don't know, just hiking, and we got an inflatable kayak in the bus. And last summer was so fun, like truly just so joyful and fun. And I had even more fun playing the shows because I didn't have to do it every single night in a row. And also I made more money than I had just doing opening slots.
What were the venues, or was it like house shows? Like what was the vibe like?
All sorts of things. Just a hodgepodge. I was like some really beautiful spaces. Like we played the music hall in Portsmouth. So stunning.
I love
like this
Portsmouth. That place is so
oh my god,
cool.
Me too. Yeah, we loved it. We like got this amazing parking spot just on the ocean, and it was such a cool experience. So we played like great little theaters and music and actual venues, and then house shows, and I kind of like set the bar for how much I was asking for each show, and everybody pretty much agreed to it. So I was like,
amazing.
Great, this is like I was in control of that. And then we also rented our house out while we were gone. So
smart.
It was really profitable and not exhausting. Mm-hmm. Like I left it full. And so we're playing a lot of the same shows, a lot of the same venues, and then adding more this time So we're going back up to, it's a northeast run again. So, and the northeast is so beautiful in the summer.
It's so beautiful in the summer. Oh, that's so great.
Yeah.
And then, so you're going to do northeast. Will you hit up west coast as well this summer or just focusing on New England area?
I think so. I'm like only in the like dreaming part of the west coast tour. I do want to do it. We haven't driven out west, so we're like, will the bus make it? But we want to try.
That's so funny. Wow. Well, this is really exciting. This is going to be a really exciting year for you. I can't wait to hear this new music. And then will this full length come out in 2023 then?
I think so. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Cool.
Yes.
Cool. Well, do you have anything about, else? Like, oh, sorry. Keep going.
I was just going to, I'm like thinking about, because I've been doing everything independent and like you used to work with Tone Tree and so I'm thinking about maybe like trying a label for the next one just to, I've never done it before. And like we've been just shopping it around and have a couple people interested. And so that's also why I'm like, I'm not in a hurry. Let me just wait. But
totally. Well, that's great. Yeah. Do you have anything else that you want to talk about or plug before we hop off?
I don't think so.
I mean, I think that you've given the listeners so many great things to read, so much great advice. I've thoroughly enjoyed this. Okay, cool. Well, Lydia, thank you so much for being on the podcast today.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you all so much for listening to this week's episode of It's My Party. If you want to learn more about Lydia, head on over to her website, www.lydialuce.com. That is www.lydialuce.com. You can listen to Lydia on Spotify, Apple Music, Amazon Music, YouTube, and probably anywhere else you're listening to music. And as always, like and subscribe, and we'll see y'all next week.